Let's look, start in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. There are some scriptures that are read in many different contexts and many different times. We hear often, but to me it's like that comfortable sweater that you like to wear, and it just feels so good. And this particular group of scriptures, this group of verses are like that. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 13. But we do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about those who are asleep, so that you will not grieve as do the rest who have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep in Jesus. For this we say to you by the word of the eternal, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words. And they are a great source of comfort. I've read these verses at my parents' funeral. We've heard them or read them at other funerals. We've heard and rehearsed them during this time. And we can draw comfort in these words. Let's also look at Revelation chapter 19 and verse 7. Revelation 19 and verse 7. Let us rejoice and be glad and give glory to him. For the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. It was given to her to clothe herself in fine linen, bright and clean. For the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. And he said to me, write, blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said to me, these are true words of God. This is a special time of celebration for us, especially today, because it points to a time when these things are to be fulfilled. Last night, Carl Knack from the Oshkosh congregation helped organize a team Bible study with a few of the elders there as well for Q&A and some presentations. And it was rewarding to see the contribution, the participation, the interest, the opportunity to gather together and talk about these things. But among other topics or conversation was the concern about what's going on around us today. The fear of where we are headed as a country, not only from a disease standpoint, but also a reaction to events that we don't agree with, no matter what side you fall on. And it is a scary time. These scriptures are to provide hope and encouragement. Yes, we still have the fear. Yes, we still have the concern. But within mind, where are we headed? What is the future for all of us? We can rely upon these words. And it is often expressed, as we just read, in the concept of a marriage and a marriage supper between the Lamb and between the saints. So today I would like to review Christ's role as the bridegroom and the church's role as the bride in the context of the return of Jesus Christ, which we are celebrating today. So first, let's review some scriptures that teach us about Jesus Christ's role. Isaiah chapter 62. Isaiah chapter 62 and verse 1. Isaiah chapter 62 and verse 1, the prophecy. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not keep quiet, until her righteousness goes forth like brightness and her salvation like a torch that is burning. The nations will see your righteousness and all kings your glory, and you will be called by a new name with the mouth of the eternal which the mouth of the Eternal will designate. You will also be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Eternal and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. It will no longer be said to you, forsaken now, nor to your land will it any longer be said desolate. But you will be called, my delight is in her, and your land married. For the Eternal delights in you, and to him your land will be married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so your sons will marry you. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so your God will rejoice over you. What we can take from this is Jesus Christ is pictured as the bridegroom, and the church is the bride. And we ask ourselves, what makes successful marriage? This is an interesting question, and many books are written and sold, and much time is spent on the concept of marriage and what makes a successful marriage. There's a fair amount of time that is, dedicated, spent, invested, by those either elders, ministers, or those who have been in the congregation a long time who provide great examples of marriage, that much time is spent helping others who are struggling at times, struggling with marriage. What makes a successful marriage? What do we focus on? What do we look to? And we could come up with quite a long list if we spent time, but because you want to go eat lunch and not listen to me talk all day, we'll just focus on two. And that is commitment and sacrifice. Commitment and sacrifice. Those are two important traits for a successful marriage, and we shall see those are traits that we see in this description in the scriptures of the marriage of the bridegroom and the lamb. So let's see what type of commitment that Jesus Christ has made for us. What commitment has he done? Let's look at Hosea chapter 2. Hosea chapter 2 and verse 14. Hosea chapter 2 and verse 14. Hosea 2:14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her. Bring her into the wilderness and speak kindly to her. Then I will give her vineyards from there in the valley of Archer as a door of hope, and she will sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the day when she came up from the land of Egypt. It will come about in that day, declares the Eternal, that you will call me Ishi, and will no longer call me Baali, and that is, you will no longer, that you will call me my husband, instead of Ishi, that's what it translates to, and no longer call me my master. And so it's a change in the relationship, it's an endearment. For I will remove the names of Baals from her mouth, so that they will be mentioned by their names no more. In that day, I will make a covenant with them, with the beasts of the field, the birds of the sky, and the creeping things of the ground. And I will abolish the bow, the sword, and the war from the land, and will make them lie down in safety. I will betroth you to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice and loving kindness and in compassion, and I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. Then you will know the Eternal. The words, it talks about to use an old term, a sparking. It's a wooing of that I will call out to you. I will speak kindly, and that's often there in a relationship when two people meet and you're trying to attract the other person. But if we continue the words, the words are remain quite beautiful in a different sense, and that is words of I will do this forever. I will betroth you forever. I will betroth you to me forever. The commitment and the words there are forever. We've had people let us down. We've been disappointed. And it's a hurtful feeling. But to know that you can rely upon people, you can think and imagine, folks, you can probably, some names come to mind that if you were to call that person, if you were to rely upon he or she, that they would always be there. They will not let you down. They will do whatever they can to make sure that they help you. and provide a service to you. And that's Jesus Christ. That's the commitment. It's forever. It's humbling to think that we have had someone that has made this type of commitment to us. Because we are human. We do let each other down. And we sometimes don't hold up our end of the bargain. But as we read in verse 21, continuing in Hosea 2, verse 21, "It will come about in that day I will respond, declares the Eternal. I will respond to the heavens, and they will respond to the earth, and the earth will respond to the grain, to the new wine, and to the oil, and they will respond to Jezreel. I will sow her for myself in the land. I will also have compassion on her who had not obtained compassion. And I will say to those who were not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God." And that those phrases, as far as "I will say to those who are not my people, you are my people," come to us from, you know, Lo-Ami and Ami. You're not my people, but now you become my people. And that is the commitment that our bridegroom has. We can have great confidence in the fact that God will return and usher in a time that is far more enjoyable than the one that we live in now. Let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 6. "For I am ready," excuse me, "I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come." Here, I should have set this up a little bit better. This is Paul talking about as he's getting close to the end of his lifetime. Once again, verse 6, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." Paul had confidence in what his rabbi, his teacher, had promised him. He had undying, unbreakable faith in the words of his teacher, that this will happen. This is what is coming. And it must have been incredible, those sessions in the wilderness where Jesus Christ specifically directed and taught Paul. That must have been fascinating. You wish one of these days you could hear a recording, you know. I can only imagine, if you think about the feast and what's coming and those things you have on your bucket wish and wish list, and you'd be able to experience things. To me, that's one thing I would like to do, is I would like to hear what was taught, what was told. Can you hit the rewind button for us and clue us in on how you taught, how Paul achieved that point where he had that unbreakable faith. Of course, we have some of it written for us in scriptures. But I'm sure not everything was collected. So anyway, sorry, a little side trip there. So we know what commitment that Jesus Christ has to us because what he was willing to sacrifice. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 9. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 9. Hebrews 2, verse 9, "But we do see him who was made for a little while lower than the angels, namely Jesus, because of the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. For it was fitting for him, for whom all these things, and through whom all these things, and bringing many sons to glory, to perfect the author of their salvation through sufferings. For both he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified are all from one Father, for which reason he is not ashamed to call them brethren." More beautiful words. Because not only was Jesus Christ willing to be sacrificed, to go through that suffering, to go through the crucifixion, but his commitment to us as the bridegroom to the bride is that we are all brethren. We are all one. We are one body committed to the Father. So we talk a little bit about as far as commitment leading to then sacrifice. A sacrifice, a successful marriage is all about sacrifice. It's all about willing to give and willing to serve. We spend quite a bit of time during the spring feast about the commitment that our Savior has made for us and why he is qualified to be King of Kings. And we talk a lot about a personal sacrifice, our individual sacrifice that for us to become a living sacrifice to God. Here in the fall feast, we start talking about a sacrifice, a commitment as a group, as well as a sacrifice as a group to the Father, or excuse me, to the bridegroom. Let's now look at Isaiah chapter 54 and verse 1. Isaiah chapter 54 and verse 1. Isaiah 54, verse 1, shout for joy, O barren one, you who have borne no child. Break forth into joyful shouting and cry aloud, you who have not travailed. For the sons of the desolate one will be more numerous than the sons of the married woman, says the Eternal. Enlarge the place of your tent. Stretch out the curtains of your dwelling. Spare not, strengthen your cords and strengthen your pegs. Be prepared for the growth. Be prepared for the expansion. Be prepared for the amount of joy and the growth of joy. For you will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your descendants will possess nations and resettle the desolate cities. Verse 4, fear not, for you will not be put to shame. And do not feel humiliated, for you will not be disgraced, but you will forget the shame of your youth, and the reproach of your widowhood you will remember no more. For your husband is your Maker, whose name is the Eternal of Hosts, and your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel, who is called the God of all the earth. For the Eternal has called you, like a wife forsaken and grieved in spirit, and even like a wife of one's youth, when she is rejected, says your God. For a brief moment I forsake you, but with great compassion I will gather you. In an outburst of anger I hid my face from you for a moment, but with everlasting kindness I will have compassion on you, says the Eternal, your Redeemer. For this is like the days of Noah to me, when I swore that the waters of Noah would not flood the earth again, so I have sworn that I will not be angry with you, nor will I rebuke you. For the mountains may be removed and the hills may shake, but my loving kindness will not be removed from you, and my covenant of peace will not be shaken, says the Eternal, who has compassion on you. Beautiful passage about the commitment and the sacrifice that the Eternal God has for us. So we talk about two sides. We've got the bridegroom and the bride. So let's talk about the bride. Let's now talk about our side. We talked about traits of a successful marriage, but those two traits need to have a two-way quality. What is our commitment? What is our sacrifice? Let's look at Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Romans 12 and verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. Our sacrifice, our commitment. There is a beautiful story that includes commitment and sacrifice, which eventually leads to a marriage. So let's go back to Ruth. I know that Mr. Dowd recently covered this. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 1. There's a family that is struck by tragedy. My apologies. There we go. It was in here this morning. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 1. Now, and it came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab and with his wife and two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon, and I won't butcher the Hebrew names. Now they entered into the land of Moab and remained there. So now if we look at verse 6 now, then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Eternal had visited his people in giving them food. So she departed from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and that they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. Now Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go, return each one of you to her mother's house. May the Eternal deal with you kindly as she has dealt with the dead and me." So the mother-in-law was saying, "Go back. Go back. Enjoy your life." But we see the commitment of Ruth, and we'll just hit this cursory. We'll cover it quickly. In verse 14, we see the loyalty of Ruth. And they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Then she said, "Behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you, for where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." So we see that character that is so beautiful from Ruth, willing to give up her own life to be committed to Naomi. In chapter 2, this leads up to we see Boaz. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth in the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." And so she went and worked in the fields, and this caught Boaz's eyes as far as seeing that commitment and seeing that example. We break down, drop down to verse 11. Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and come to a people that you did not previously know. May the Eternal reward your work and your wages be full from the Eternal, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here, that you may eat the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." And so she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. So the sacrifice and commitment that Ruth had demonstrated was known, and her reputation had preceded her. Now let's drop down chapter 4, and we see the result. Ruth 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Eternal who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Now that's quite the ode. That's quite the praise. Ruth was the epitome of sacrifice and commitment. Sacrifice her own life and a commitment first to Naomi, and then we say to Ruth. And the blessing that is given to Ruth that her offspring would be famous and known in Israel. Well, little did they know. Verse 16, then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. And the neighbors went and gave him a son, saying, O son has been born to Naomi. So then they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. So not only through her commitment and her example and her sacrifice, but she became a part of that lineage through David that led to eventually Jesus Christ. A beautiful example of commitment and personal sacrifice. So once again, in the spring, we review this on an individual level. I would like to ask us to do this same type of personal check in our commitment and sacrifice to the plan of God as we are celebrating today. What is our sacrifice to this plan? What is our commitment? What is our commitment to the body, the church? Jesus Christ is coming to return, or is going to marry the bride. The bride is a collection of all of us. Our personal relationship is directly with God, but as a bride, as a body, we're collective. And so our commitment and our thought process should not only be to God the Father, but what is it to the bride, the aspect, the body, the whole body? What is our commitment to the body? The church and its duties and in essence, what is our commitment to each other? Let's look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, we'll read the what in essence is a mystery. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22. Ephesians 5, verse 22. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be subject to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. Remember, we are members of his body. For this reason, a man shall leave the father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. This whole concept of marriage in today's day and age is quite different than what we read in Ephesians chapter 5. And I understand it. Obviously, we don't like it or agree with it. But indeed, if we know that Satan is the god of this world, we know that the minds and understanding of people have been blinded to the full truth in the full word, and the full plan of salvation, and as Paul just wrote, it's just not even today, but in that time, that these things are a mystery. So if we don't view marriage in this same way, as if an individual does not view marriage in this same way and understand that it is something that is ordained by God and is something that represents Christ and the church, then marriage in today's age is just more of an event, a potential occurrence or non-occurrence, because if we like each other, let's just live together. Why worry about this marriage thing? And I'm not even referencing a civil act, but I'm talking about the religious act and the contract between a man and a woman and to God. The laws or the civil is just a part of it, looking at it from the civil perspective. And so they don't understand. You know, they belittle the concept of a marriage. They belittle the concept of the importance of a man and a woman. But as we just read, this is integral to God's plan. This is integral to the Feast of Trumpets and what we have, what we're celebrating today. When we think about marriage on the Ephesians plane and not the today's cultural plane, it's a different event. It's a man and a woman preparing for marriage. It's preparing for that relationship in a different way. It's not knowing each other intimately. It's an anticipation of what the event will be. It's the anticipation of a life together. And if it's that lifelong commitment, it takes on even a greater weight. And then a man and a woman need to prepare for marriage. Yes, the excitement grows, and the building of a unit of people together and their lives together and a commitment to each other. And the preparation. Each do need to prepare. What am I going to bring to this marriage? In counseling those who are struggling or reflecting on what I need to do to improve my own marriage, when we think about the concept of commitment and sacrifice, it's an individual event. In other words, I can't do anything to change Tammy's commitment and sacrifice for me. I can, as we read, be a better husband, to love her as I love my own body, to take care of her, to cherish her, to be an example, to give her reasons why she would want to sacrifice and commit. But I cannot change anything. Likewise, she can't change anything for me. And when we often deal with struggles and challenges, we hear, well, this marriage would be better if only so, or if only my spouse would do X, Y, and Z. If he would do this, or if she would do this, then I can meet my commitments. It's not what we read. It's our commitments. And I remember having a conversation with one gentleman specifically who made the statement, or we're having this conversation, and I said, well, so-and-so, my question is for you, what do you think you need to do? What do you think is important for you to work on? And he thought for a moment, he looked at me, he said, well, that's a very good question. I haven't thought about it that way. But what I need to do is find out a better way to get her to submit to me. So we're missing the point here. We're missing the point. So look at Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25 and verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish, five were prudent, When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the prudent took oil in flask along with their lamps. Now, while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight, there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your lamp oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went to him with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Later, the other virgins also came, saying, "Lord, Lord, open for us." But he said, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you, but on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour." The intent was there. The desire was there. The knowledge was there. They knew and understood that they wanted to be with the bridegroom, that they wanted to be ready, that they did not want to miss this event. The heart was there. The mind was there. But unfortunately, the commitment was not. The activity that they needed to do to be prepared to meet up, to meet their end of the bargain, per se, I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but to meet their contract or their part of this wonderful covenant, they needed to prepare. There are many things that can take us away from this commitment and this sacrifice. Just like what we read with the 10 virgins, there's many things that keep us distracted. Whether it's a question of timing or it's a question of, there's other things that are more important at this time. I'd rather sleep. In their case, we will be tested. There are many things that are testing us today in our commitment, in our sacrifice, as a bride, both individually and collectively. What keeps us away from focusing on the work at hand, even as a church? We think as long as we can stay tight together and close together through these challenges, but even something as like a mask has caused division, has caused us to, in essence, as an individual and as a group, to get our eye off of what the true goal is, what the mission is, the focus, and that is bringing many sons to glory. It is being willing to set aside those things that keep us from what is important. We talk about examples that we can look to of this commitment and sacrifice and not allowing things to get us away from the mission at hand. I think of Mr. Northrop, Tammy's father. 20-year Navy guy, plenty of sense of humor. He always was joking with a twinkle in his eye. He committed service to not only his nation, but then to the church when he was called, eventually as far as an elder, but he was one of those that was always looking to take care of people. And then, unfortunately, early in our relationship, Tammy's mother came down with Alzheimer's. Horrible, horrible disease, as many of us are experiencing with our loved ones. It's a challenge. But through this, and Tammy's mom and dad were older when they had her, so Mr. Northrop was already quite advanced in age. When Mrs. Northrop, mom, came down with Alzheimer's, it'd be really easy. I don't know what I would do. It could be really easy to how do we handle that? How do I personally handle that as far as taking care? Would I have how would I approach that? And Tammy's dad, he was retired, he could do this, but he took care of Mrs. Northrup, fed her and clothed her and changed her. And when we started encouraging her to say, "Dad, maybe you need to put her into a home. You need to protect your health." His commitment was to his wife. It was a beautiful commitment. It was a beautiful sacrifice. This is a type of sacrifice that we need, that we're willing to commit to, not only to the work and to the body and to each other, what are we going to set aside to make sure that we're meeting our commitment to each other? What are we going to make sure that does not come between us? That does not come between us. Let's look at Matthew chapter 24 and verse 1. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 1. Jesus came out from the temple and was going away with his disciples, came up to point out the temple buildings to him. And he said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another, which will not be torn down." As he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" And Jesus answered them and said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for these things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and the kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes, but all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all my nations because of my name. All that time many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will rise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he will be saved. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." The end, the commitment will be tested. And as we talked about, these tests will come in different forms, in many ways that we don't anticipate. Unfortunately, our adversary is very cunning. He is good at what he does, which is bad. But he is very good at what he does, and that is to cause division. And where many things we don't think it would not test us as a group, we are then often surprised how it can divide us and keep us as a body from focusing on what we need to focus on. Let's skip down to verse 42. "Therefore, be alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think he will. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his father finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions, but if the evil slave says to in his heart, 'My master is not coming for a long time,' and begins to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards, and the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him at an hour which he does not know, and will cut him into pieces and assign him in a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." We don't know the time. We can look to prophecy. We were discussing this again last night. We can look to prophecy to know that it may not or will not happen tonight. We know it's going to happen in the future because things need to happen. You know, the trumpets and the plagues and the woes and all those things need to happen first. And that what potentially could lead us to be sleepy. I mean, if we know it's not going to happen tonight, I've got time. But do we? Because we have the analogy of the virgins, but that not having the oil can come in many different ways. We don't know if we will be living tomorrow individually. We don't know when something unfortunate is going to take place or some accident that will suddenly make our time being now as opposed to sometime in the future. We don't know. We talked about those events or those conflicts, those things that's going to keep us off the work, off the mission. We don't know when that's going to come and slap us upside the head, where we will be tested on our response. where we don't know that time of that challenge. And if we're not prepared, then we can allow that test to take us away, to cause division, to cause body or harm to the body. Let's look, let's continue on then, 25, Matthew 25. Then the kingdom of heaven will be compared to verse 31. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, and they will sit on his glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? Then the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. What is our sacrifice to the bridegroom? We see the two missions of the church: preaching a gospel, preparing a people. And we've talked about the bride making herself ready. What is our contribution? What is our participation in making the bride ready? Matthew chapter 24 and verse 14. We read it once. Now let's read it again. The gospel of the kingdom of God shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. The mission of the church is to preach a gospel and prepare a people. We ask, God, when are you going to bring an end? When are you going to come? When are you going to put away all of these things? And I wonder, and this is just me wondering, if God the Father is sitting there thinking, when are you guys going to be ready? Because I want to go to the next step. When are you going to be ready? No, once again, that's my thought. It's, scriptures according to Resta Vilbus. No, but it's we know and we read that we are to be about getting ready. We are there to participate in making the bride ready. And so, as we think about getting back to that example about what am I doing, instead of, God, what are you doing? It's, what am I doing? What are we doing? What are we doing? Marriage is all about sacrifice. It's all about commitment. We are called to acts of service. God's form of government is participatory. We're taking an active part in God's government. We're taking an active part as the bride. It's not the proverbial trophy wife for people just to look at. No. It's the proverbial Proverbs 31. It's to be active. So, are we participating now? Are we preparing now? And I think it's a wonderful time for us to reflect on during these fall holy days. In addition to reflecting in the spring holy days about our individual, I think it's a great time as we prepare for the feast, as we celebrate this day, as we get excited for being able to be together in 2 weeks to celebrate the Feast of Trumpets, as we celebrate and think about becoming one with God a week from Monday. Of all those things, it's also a time to reflect on our position, our place, and our commitment. Our level of sacrifice. Are we doing those things to be ready? It is a scary time. It is a frightening time. I got folks from France calling me saying, are you okay? Because I know you're from Kenosha. People I work with in France. It's pretty wild. And with all that was going on in Kenosha. But anyway, it's a scary time. How in the response to the challenges we're facing now with the current coronavirus, but we know that it has been tremendously worse, and we know that it's going to get tremendously worse. It's a scary, scary time. Scary time for us individually, and a scary time for us as a church. It is scary. But as we just read, we have hope. We have a bridegroom that has a plan. And as we read in 1 Thessalonians 4, we can take comfort in these words and these commitments. We have a bridegroom that has already sacrificed and continues to sacrifice as part of that commitment. That is rock solid. So as we reflect on this wonderful marriage example, and we reflect on the bride, let's reflect on our commitment and our service.